give a little bit, I'll give a little bit of my love to you. There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile and show you care.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is James Martinez for another edition of Cash Flow. It is July 30th, 2008. Welcome, everybody. Just a couple of quick news flashes that are relevant today before we get started with our special guest, Bob Neverett. For those of you that have called me regarding student loans and so forth, just a reminder now, coming out on the news, there are Massachusetts. If you're living in Massachusetts and you're trying to go to school, they're not going to be doing any student loans in Massachusetts anymore because there's no money to loan. That just came out on the news yesterday. You also realize that in some places in the United States, they're going to start cutting down the school work week to a four-day work week because of gas prices. And also, relative to this particular broadcast, I can't wait to get Bob's comments on this, but we just heard on the news yesterday, and I checked it out, that the Illinois State has proposed a new law that they're going to try and institute regarding cell phones, meaning you cannot be talking on a cell phone when you're walking in the street or walking across the street. Believe it or not, that is set up to go, and that is a big topic of discussion. I wish they would do that in California, because it's my understanding that they're having to do that because people are getting in too many accidents because they're just not paying attention to what's going on. They're too wired in. So I saw that yesterday, and I went, here we go. This is the beginning of the whole thing. So without further ado, let me see. Bob, are you there?
Yes, James. Good afternoon.
How you doing? Did you hear about that? The Illinois State is going to try and institute a law on that.
I never heard that. I just heard it from you. This supports my idea that we're post the chip body. The invisible effects of it are now totally visible to everybody, and they're going to try to belatedly police the old environment while a new secret environment, a new invisible effect is surfacing. And that effect is the extension of the corpus callosum. People talk about literacy is an extension of the left hemisphere of the brain, and electricity is an extension of the right hemisphere. But we're well past that, and the chip landscape, the internet technology, in simple terms, has really provided an environment that's extending the part of the brain which talks and relates the left and right hemisphere. So the real integral function of the corpus callosum has been extended, and that's going to be an incredible effect that's already surfacing among the urban legend that there are indigo kids. You heard about them, the indigo kids.
Oh, sure.
The mutants. So we're going to police the chip body and try to retrieve left hemisphere American values. Literate values are not going to work because there's always a new environment. Legislation is always obsolete when we're talking my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an effect. When you can see the old environment, which you never noticed, that means a new environment has become the fishbowl you're swimming in, because fish never know they're in water or
right.
What kind of water it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a new environment, which is what I've been saying for the last 5 years or more, and the effects of policing the chip body is what we've been seeing during the Bush administration. That's what the
correct.
Patriot Bill is.
Right.
So that's my comment. The other effect is there's no money anywhere. It's because of the chip landscape, especially for the United States, since they went full hog into the chip landscape and adopted it. We're concentration camp measures from now on in terms of the chemical body. But people will remain on their chip bodies and having a good time.
Yes. And not paying attention when they're crossing the street.
That's right.
No,
okay.
I'm waiting for them to institute that here in Los Angeles, because I can't wait when they do. But go on. Continue with what you were going to say.
Well, of course, I have to come up with a pattern to provide new content for all those listening on the Internet. All right?
Okay.
So I thought I'd discuss something that's talked about a lot in the commercials here on Achieve Radio, and that's about your personal development or your soul or your inner self or expanding your potential, what is known as the New Age meme, right? The New Age meme.
Right. That's right.
I would begin by asking you, what do you think people imagine the soul is? What is the image they have of it today? Can you think of anything that strikes you?
For generally, I would say that I don't think the public has any idea in the world. That's the last thing on their mind, even though they know that that probably it does exist, but I don't think they have any concept of how to describe it.
Okay, well, that's good fodder for me to work with. I'm going to go back to and run through the history of the images of the soul or of the afterlife and show how the soul or the image of the afterlife is always the form of communication that a secular society has. That's what I'm going to try to prove here, that
the image
of the soul and of the afterlife is actually an effect of the medium that a society uses. Mm. So we begin with the speech-oriented, speech-defined society, pre-literate society. Now, if you look through some of the texts that were written later about what people thought happened to them when they died, for example, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, you will see that it's imagined as a swampy bog run by some kind of tyrant, the tyrant expressing a group mind. If you think of the effects, the non-visual environment of speech before writing came in and allowed us to see speech, before that, it's a dark bog, a dark swamp. That's actually how McLuhan describes the environment of speech before writing came in. Mm-hmm. And if you read people like William Irwin Thompson, and I think it's his book Coming Into Being, came out about 96, 97, you will see he runs through the images of the soul. He has an inkling of the effect of the medium because he did study Marshall McLuhan, but he's not going to say it as stark as I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying the bog of speech is the image of the afterlife in primitive societies. Now, we could bring in maybe the shaman's image of the afterlife. Do you have any knowledge of that? What do shamanic Amazonian societies think the afterlife is?
They think the afterlife, or the image of it, from my understanding from discussing it with shamans in the Amazon, is that it exists all the time. And that it's just our perception of that we already are dead. We are dead. We're just our consciousness is in a different area right now. So when we do pass and we go through the astral and go through that transformation, that it's just like switching channels. All the personality, everything is still the same, but the perceptual environment is completely different.
Okay, that's really interesting because if we think of speech as more of an oral, acoustic, auditory experience, and that the more primitive societies, which we see in the Amazonian societies, they are speech-based, but also they have a great sense of what I call tactility, the interplay of things. And when the interplay is sort of conscious in a society, that would be how cavemen would think and be. There is no division between things. Speech does make divisions. And so the transitory, no wall, no veil between the death states and the living states is exactly what you've just described. And
that's right.
Also the idea that you make your own consciousness, their statement to that is what happens. If you imagine a child, you know, in the first 6 months, they're making their sensory world. Think of our earliest societies as childlike, not a value judgment, just early levels of human experience. It's like children. And it's almost like total fantasy. And so what your little suggestion there fits my understanding of a tactile environment. And then as you move into speech, you get into the boggy, dark, tyrannical situation, which you don't have in a tactile Amazonian society. Everybody's in it together, and they work together, and it's a voluntaristic society, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. We would romanticize that kind of society right now. But anyways, as we move into the bog of speech, you get the dark, dark images of the Gilgamesh epic and things like that. I don't want to go into too many details about this. But because of the medium we're in, you know, we cannot demand too much literary visual attention in this medium, right?
Right.
So we're just skimming the evolution of consciousness and the soul like cartoon brushstrokes.
Yes.
So when you move into writing, then you start to get intuitions of one God. The Egyptian culture supposedly had monotheistic ideas for a short while, introduced by one or two pharaohs, and then it faded because that was, 2,000, 3,000 BC. They didn't have enough long-term effective writing at that point. And it's also a different kind of writing from the phonetic alphabet that will come in 500 BC. So the beginning of multi-gods, many deities in the pre-Homeric or even Homeric societies, Sumerian societies, and even now if you bring in Sitchin, isn't that his name, Sitchin?
Zakhar Sitchin, yes.
Yeah, him talking about a bureaucracy coming from another planet or another galaxy, an alien bureaucracy setting up a control of time. See, this is what's interesting. The Amazonian society, the real primitive societies, don't have divisions of time. It's all happening forever, and there was nothing happening because you're dead.
Right, that's right. That's right.
And once you get into writing and the effect of the calligraphy and the syllabus and iconography, you're beginning to solidify a division between this world and the other world, and therefore you're locking down a sense of time or duration. So duration comes in at the later stage of the speech society as it moves into the early phases of writing, okay? And mm-hmm. the image of the soul is limited by time. You actually start to get into ideas of rebirth. See, they still have the tactile communication with the other dimensions, the post-life situation, but now it's regulated within time, and you can't have time until you start conceptualizing it through writing. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
So then when we move ahead to the phonetic alphabet, I mean, there are phases that you would look through in anthropology at each different, you could say, what happened at 4,000 BC, what happened at 3,000 BC, 2,000, 1,000. But, I'm not providing the subtleties, and that would require a lot of research. But William Irwin Thompson's books do touch on this. I think he's the only thinker adapting the McLuhan model to, quote, religious issues, the theological issues, other than myself. But I haven't produced any books like Thompson. Anyways, you move into this amazing effect of the phonetic alphabet, which is the first time you can take 26 letters and streamline the subtleties of oral culture, which is also semi-writing cultures, which cannot be translated from one culture to another. The first person who was able to standardize communication in the writing world was Alexander the Great. Because he took this little module of 26 letters, or maybe it was 22, whatever it was at his period. It's now 26, but whatever it was in that period of 300 BC, 350 BC, he was able to take each little tribe's oral intonations, like, think of the Chinese. They say a few words, but there's a million intonations that change thousands of meanings and implications, right?
That's right.
You can standardize that with the phonetic alphabet. It creates what's called equitone, one level of monotone almost. It says, okay, all your echoing tribal rhythmic modulations that your tribe isn't very sensitive to, we will put a pavement over that. The pavement is the 26 letters, and we will standardize it, and then we can translate your stuff into the standard.
Right, yeah.
So standardization is the effect of the phonetic alphabet. And the Greeks didn't have enough papyrus to hold together, so the Romans come, 200 BC into the time of Christ, they standardize it with the roads and paper routes. And then that's the first real bureaucratic organization of not only time, but what we call space. Mm-hmm. The Sumerian and Egyptian societies only controlled time and what happened to the pharaoh after he died as he moved into the bog. But because it was not the group bog of primitive speech societies, it was now beginning to be hierarchical in Egyptian times. Everything was devoted to preserving the personality, the entity, the essence of the pharaoh going into the bog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beginning of something special about the individual, but it's all geared toward one person, the pharaoh. Then when you get to the phonetic alphabet and you start to have the idea of democracy, how could that happen? Why would that come in? Operating within the dimensions of space. So you had the control of time, then the phonetic alphabet controls space with papyrus and roads. So the soul starts to become an individual equal before the law. That was the big revolution in Athens, all right, and around the time of Socrates and Plato. Now, they start to think about whether there's a soul or not and argue it, and we have what's called philosophy. And philosophy, being the effect of the alphabet, when you standardize all these intonations that speech societies have to 26 letters, which are actually meaningless signs for meaningless sounds. We say A, B, C, D, E, but it's actually the original sounds are A, B, C, D, or A, B, C, D, E.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The intonation, once we have the alphabet, it becomes A, B, C, D, E, but the letter A has no reference in nature. The iconography in writing before the phonetic alphabet, it looks like what it's describing.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an image, A, B, C, D, E, that doesn't look like anything, doesn't sound like any natural rhythm other than the tool and function of saying it. That standardized the psyche. That levels the psyche.
And imprints it
so that when you read the phonetic alphabet, you have to translate those meaningless signs and sounds into tree, house, movie, James Martinez, right?
Right, exactly.
That schizophrenic splitting function creates an echo, a visual mirror in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is the I that Socrates is talking about when he says, know thyself.
I, meaning ego I, right?
Yes, but it's a mirror image in the mind caused by the phonetic alphabet. Now, these ideas were proposed by Eric Havelock, James Joyce, Wyndham Lewis, Marshall McLuhan, but they weren't really, in their day, able to analyze with technology the brain. Well, there's a new book out that's starting to prove this with technology. It's called Proust and the Squid. I think I got that right. It's a female scientist who's done brain research and sees the difference between alphabetic cultures and non-alphabetic cultures.
Okay, hang on. What's the name? The title of that book again is Proust and the Squid by...
I don't have the name right here. I'll try to get it at the break.
Okay,
so it just came out, I think, a year or so ago. That is the first time to look at the McLuhan, James Joyce thesis and use brain scanning technology, the amazing things they have today, and to actually study the effects of script and writing and the alphabet on the different parts of the brain. So anyways, going back to this proposal, this theory that the whole psyche of Western society since Greece and then reinforced by the printing press is a visual image. And it becomes an idea of a god is one entity, no more polydeities as was happening in Homer's time, the streamlining of the deity cosmos into one god with the Hebrew religion and then the Christian religion and Islamic religion, that was an effect of the phonetic alphabet. So the medieval cultures were not like the last 300-400 years after the printing press came in, but they both are parts of the continuum of Western society and the ideas of time and space. But you can see that the reflection of the soul in this visual mirror caused by the phonetic alphabet, which is actually crystallized around the concepts of St. Augustine, mm-hmm. is the beginning of the idea of an individual soul who lives beyond this world and has a more important realm beyond this world. But actually, it's the image of a life beyond this world in Western culture since the phonetic alphabet is just an effect that this abstract mirror that's been created in the mind through the phonetic alphabet is the more important region.
So it's interesting that you're bringing up the subject matter, because probably about 30, 45 minutes ago before we got on the air, somebody called me up. They're trying to find out, they're talking about their money issue and what to do and when do I do this and so forth. And then as a kind of side discussion, this particular woman brought up, she says, this is like biblical what's happening right now. It's like, I think people are starting to wonder if there is a soul and where is our soul and all this. And she actually brought that up. So it's interesting that you bring that up today.
And that's a caller you got earlier today.
Yeah. Because they're looking at it not only from an individual financial perspective and survival, but What are the bigger implications for human beings and the soul and evolution? Where are we going? This person was like, it's kind of surprised because I don't get all those questions all the time. Usually I keep the religion and everything out of it because that's their own thing. But this person addressed it to me.
That's interesting. Because that's exactly the issue, is that she's becoming conscious of the electronic credit world, the present medium she lives in, and realizes it seems to have an effect on the visual tradition of literacy, which is archetypalized by the image of the Bible.
Right, and then because she brought up to me, she said, and I don't know whether she was a Christian, Catholic, Buddhist, I don't know what it was, and she says, I imagine that right now the Christian faith is being reinforced by the stuff that's happening right now, because now they see it. This is the end times. This is it. This is the sign. This is this. And she was going off. She says they're probably more cemented in their faith now than they've ever been in the history of Christianity now.
That's right. No, that's, we're going to lead to that point. Won't get to that until the second half hour. I have been working, thinking of that. It's very timely. So we look at this image of why people in the 20th century, even the 19th century, said, why were people so dedicated to the afterlife in the medieval period and even into the Puritan and the Western imperialistic Vatican and Protestant domination around the world in that industrial era? Why were people doing that? Well, if you technically look at the effect of visual space, which is this mirror image, it happens in the brain, and actually, just a minute. Actually, this left hemisphere, this image enhances the left hemisphere more than the right hemisphere. So we have generations of people dedicated to this after image in visual space, and once we entered into the radio movie and this very hedonistic pagan, quote, pagan, secular, discarnate world, people find the religious impulse to work for the later life, the afterlife, as absurd, because they live too much in the now and they can get so much instant gratification. They're not aware of that's the change caused by electric media, which provides all times and spaces immediately.
Exactly, right.
So you can look at the image of the soul that comes in with the phonetic alphabet and the individualization and the sacredness of the individual, but within that bureaucratic holdover of medieval religions, and then the liberation of that by the printing press, where someone could read the Bible. Now, we're still talking about people within literacy. We're not talking about non-literate cultures in the rest of the world, but our history is literate, so we refer to the content, which is us. So we know that 400, 500 years ago, the Protestant Reformation came in, where it destabilized the image, the medieval image that the Catholic Church enjoyed, and people could actually read this visual light of God in the Bible personally. Therefore, that heightened the sense of the individual ego and the spiritual purpose and the individual relationship to the afterlife to extreme. So that's from 500, 1500 to the 1800s, all right? This dedication to the Industrial Revolution is considered a Protestant ethic applied to the market. All right?
Gotcha.
Historians have written on this.
We're going to take a little break. We're going to be back with Bob Nevert. This is James Martinez. Cash flow for Wednesday, July 30th, 2008. We'll be back to discuss this and more right after the break. Stand by, everybody. We'll be right back.
There's no bloody revolution.
everybody. This is James Martinez from the Cash Flow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind in your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
New River Press is proud to sponsor Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Benjamin Eno. We offer the best in unusual New Age books, along with three great books by your host, Paul Eno. New River Press offers the new blockbuster on animal communication, Hear All Creatures, The Journey of an Animal Communicator by Karen Anderson. And experience 41 Signs of Hope, the inspiring book by Dave Kane. And don't miss Shadows on My Shift, Real Life Stories of a Psychic EMT by psychic medium Sherry Lee Devereaux. Achieve radio talk show host of Opening Your Intuitive Eyes. Available from New River Press, publishers of unusual books. Visit newriverpress.com, amazon.com, or your favorite bookstore.
Hidden deep within you is an unstoppable power. If you want to deepen your relationships, supercharge your productivity, and enjoy more life energy than you've felt in years, then visit LetNothingStopYou.org to learn more about Secrets of Being Unstoppable by Guy Finley. This new audio program will give you the knowledge you need to enjoy the happiness and success your heart longs for. That's Guy Finley's Secrets of Being Unstoppable at LetNothingStopYou.org.
I'm Alec Baldwin. Like any parent, I'm concerned about children's health. Many kids don't eat as they should and are at risk for long-term health problems like diabetes and heart disease. But here's good news. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other low-fat vegetarian foods can protect our kids and keep the rest of the family healthy too. For a free booklet, call the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine at 1-877-685-KIDS or visit www.kidsgethealthy.org.
Listening to AchieveRadio.com, a new drummer for a new awakening.
This is James Martinez on Cashflow. We're going to be back here. Bob Nevitt is our special guest today. My suggestion for everybody is if they've been listening to this broadcast or listening to the archives and then listening to Bob Nevitt, to go back and listen to these archives in succession. That'll help you understand a little bit more and give you more time to digest a lot of what he said and what we've discussed. But as we go, Bob, are you there?
Yes, that's July 2nd, 9th, 16th, 23rd, and now the 30th. Where I started on the 2nd, so it's always usually Wednesday.
Right, that's
it. For the archives. Now, I looked up the book. It's called Proust and the Squid, and the subtitle is The Story and Science of the Reading Brain. And I'll read a little excerpt from a review. This is from Publishers Weekly. The author, Marianne Wolfe, is a professor of child development at Tufts University. She integrates psychology and archaeology, linguistics and education, history and neuroscience in a truly path-breaking book at the development of the reading brain. The reading brain being a complicated phenomenon that Wolfe seeks to chronicle from both the early history of humanity and the early stages of an individual's development. See, there's the growth of the child as a parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a quote from the book, "Unlike its component parts such as vision and speech, reading has no direct genetic program passing it on to future generations," end of quote. Along the way, Marianne Wolfe introduces concepts like, quote, word poverty, the situation in which children by age 5 have heard 32 million less words than their counterparts, in brackets with chilling long-term effects, and makes time for musing and affecting anecdotes like the only child she knew to fake a reading disorder. Imbrak is attempting to get back into his beloved literacy training program. Though it could probably command a book of its own, the sizable third section of the book covers the complex topics of dyslexia, explaining clearly and expertly, quote, what happens when the brain can't learn to read, which is what's been happening, according to McLuhan, the last 50, 80 years. One of those rare books that synthesizes cutting-edge interdisciplinary research with the inviting tone of a curious, erudite friend. Then in brackets, think Malcolm Gladwell. He's the guy who did the book who became well-known for the Tipping Point book.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Wolfe's first book for a general audience. It's an eye-opening winner and deserves a wide readership. Now, what's interesting for me is it's a book that is consolidating what my colleagues and I have been doing for decades, talking about.
Right. Does it references McLuhan in there quite a bit, or?
I have not seen the book. I know that some McLuhanites, like his son, Eric McLuhan, recommends it, so probably does, though I can't say so. But we recognize, a lot of academics aren't allowed to talk about McLuhan. It's just, he's taboo. It's something
why?
Like, it's
why?
Like,
why is he taboo?
Because he embarrassed everybody in academia in the 50s and 60s by exposing our hidden assumptions of literacy, which we consider the best medium ever. And he showed it, and he wasn't trying to put it down, but he x-rayed the effects and services and disservices of literacy, and the literate establishment, represented by someone like Lewis Latham, the editor of Atlantic Monthly, or maybe it's Harper's, I always get it mixed up, but he... In 1994, when they reissued McLuhan's book, Understanding Media, he apologized for representing the New York cognoscenti, literate faddists, who totally misinterpreted McLuhan, didn't see the importance of his work, and Latham did his mea culpa in the MIT reissue of the book. So if you want to check out the failure of literate people and the humiliation, and Lewis Latham talks about this, that these people got just by someone like an alien coming from another planet and x-raying the assumptions of our society.
Very
and that caused a problem for him in academia. And the fact that he went out in popular media, like I'm doing, and talking on radio and TV and discussing these matters, a university professor back in the 50s and 60s didn't do that. They were snobbish to pop culture.
I see. Interesting. What did McLuhan say about, when you were talking about the phonetic alphabet and what McLuhan had to say about that, what did McLuhan say anything about the Cherokee Indians who actually were required to have or create a written language and actually change it? Did he ever say anything about that?
I don't know if he spoke. I'm not aware of him addressing that particular issue. But the main point he made is that there was all kinds of written languages. South Korea had an interesting one that was sort of like the phonetic alphabet, but none of them were specifically streamlined like the Greek phonetic alphabet. And it's that particular effect that's totally unique, and it created a society in the West where people are so focused on the individual, quote, ego, and their soul. And so when the Protestant ethic, just to go back to what we were saying before the break, the Protestant ethic dominates from, you know, 1800 into 1700 into now, into at least 1950, where if you did well in accumulating material products, then you would be rewarded in the afterlife. Now, there's an example of industrial technology influencing the fate of the soul.
And big time. Big time.
Big time.
That in itself right there is, I won't even say.
That's the American dream.
Right. That's right. Greed is good. Greed is right. Greed with Wall Street with Michael Douglas. Yeah, greed.
Right. Well, that's the later effect of Lefter Gates. So I'm discussing the image of the soul. And for religious people, this, I hope, doesn't sound sacrilegious, and I don't mean it. I want people to have a clear image of what consciousness in the afterlife is, and that requires now, for the first time in history, looking at the historical cultural conditioning that limited our images of the afterlife. Mm-hmm, that's what we're doing here. This is actually a new way of presenting theology. So this industrial ego, private, sacred, Bible reading, industrious, building up the family to do well in industrial consumption and spreading the industrial medium around the world, what we now call imperialism, but it was not seen that way back then because it was a new environment and everybody wanted to be part of it. It was a new water for the fish to swim in, but it had extreme bias towards the eye. And then you bring in the light through the transcendent transparency of the electric environment. Think of the light bulb. You put the light bulb anywhere, any time of the day, and therefore it's not limited by night. You realize how revolutionary that is for people 125 years ago?
Oh, I'm well aware. You know as well as I do that I discussed that down in the jungle when I was in the jungle about, you know, most of culture down there, their biorhythms and their whole, when they eat, everything, their whole day is associated when the sun goes down, and then the institution of synthetic lights, and some of those people that have never even hardly had that, is a dramatic change. More work can be done, you know?
Okay, that's right. So you have the beginning effects of the telegraph and radio and TV and all these electric media, which allow people to be anywhere instantly. Like on the telephone, and for all the people that are listening to us, we're in their home, they're in our home, we're everywhere at the same time. This and following the laws of the medium here, that means that the image of the soul will change. The image of the afterlife and of your own worth and the ritual of developing a sense of the sacred, all that will change. And we've had nothing but change in the religious field for 100 years. First, it begins with Darwin. And then the capitulation by the Protestant religion, at least, to taking in secular education as a guarantee for everybody, and everybody reading science and being taught as a guarantee for the growth of a child, is the secular information that Darwin's evolution brought in. Then Freud comes in, then Einstein, and these alterings of the image of the cosmos create a panic in the old religious institutions and in the citizens themselves, and most of the 20th century has been an incredible century of self-exploration in all kinds of bizarre forms, and the use of cults and the exploration through drugs of everybody trying to figure out what the image that the new media has made of their psyche, how to relate that to daily life in previous institutions. So it's been a chaotic century for religion.
Very chaotic. No, I'm listening to you as you say that, and I'm like, yeah, in this particular country now, just from people that I've interacted with because of the psychological stress that they're under, by the time they reach me, these issues of kind of apocalyptic religion always comes into it, sooner or later. If I'm on the phone long enough, religion will come into the conversation. They call me with massive amounts of financial stress and breakups, and they're starting to ask... Because of that, they start to ask the big questions.
Yes.
The bigger questions about their life, and they share
them. Now, James, the big questions started with the phonetic alphabet. That's the foundation of philosophy. and the effect of Plato and Socrates and Aristotle and all that, they would ask questions about the self. Nobody asked questions in Eskimo culture or Inuit culture or Amazonian culture. You didn't ask questions. You lived the dance of interacting with the sun.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So now we have this electric age, and one of the main characteristics of it is total tribal participation, 24/7, in news, entertainment, what we call entertainment, but actually it's just processing, your brain's processing new data.
Mm-hmm.
The book, Proust and the Squid, The Story and Science of the Reading Brain, is focusing on the effects of literacy. But what is the lifestyle for the dancing brain, which happens when you're in a radio, TV, satellite, computer environment?
Mm-hmm.
So it's obvious that people by the 60s were start latching onto things like LSD,
mm-hmm.
which provides movies for your mind.
Right.
And then there's all kinds of spiritual significance projected into that. But the movies of your mind is just your private, literate ego trying to keep up with the collective effects of everybody living inside a global movie called media.
Right.
Or advertising.
Advertising, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And rock and roll. So what happens, though, you bring in the digital speed-up of the 70s and 80s, and the movie scenario of the LSD attempt for stabilizing the psyche and creating a new image of the soul because there's a new medium. But when that's the analog media phase of the mid-20th century. When you get into the digital, that creates such a speed-up for the old analog media environments that you then have people putting on whole historical technological epochs as a religious expression. And that's when you get into greed and the Wall Street. Yeah, what was the name? What's the actor?
Michael Douglas.
Oh, yeah, Michael Douglas. And that image of the 80s of greed, of acquisition, of celebrating any new accessory and making millions out of it, that is putting on old apparatus, not only for the literate brain, but for the chemical body. Because the discarnate body and then the digitized body complexify all these issues, and that is a stunner for the average citizen in the 80s. Why is the Republican Party taking over with this celebration of free trade, entrepreneurial avariciousness and greed? And it just seemed ridiculous. And a lot of people reacted to that and went back to the last stronghold of the literate ego, the Bible, and that's why you had the rise of fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm,
and the
mm-hmm.
TV evangelist.
Right.
That was an image of the soul that could not keep up with the new soul, which would be going to seminars with Terence McKenna mm-hmm. or any of the New Age seminars at Esalen Institute and the Human Potential Movement, or listening to Ramtha and Shirley MacLaine talking about channeling, all this bizarre images for literate culture, flooding the culture, flooding the world.
Yes.
It's what William Irwin Thompson called the planetization of the esoteric. The esoteric being private oral traditions passed on from guru to disciple in different forms and different cultures. That all comes back when, in the digital age, everybody's living in their little matrix tube, their little womb of entertainment, and therefore they're isolated from the literate industrial community, but they're looking for a dialogue, so they seek out a personal guru who will address them personally. And that changed the image of medicine and all kinds of effects.
Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So if you review what happened over the last 50 years, you see it's obvious that new media changed the image of the soul.
It sure did.
Right.
I think that that in itself for today, the relevancy of that couldn't be more apparent, because I for some reason in the last two or three days I realized what this financial crisis, the kind of placebo of the financial crisis in the digital environment, what it's done and how it's kind of push to the surface lots of philosophical and religious ideas.
Western literary,
yes.
Questions.
Big time, because of the it's like it was down there to begin with, but it was all this pressure and everything has pushed all of this stuff to the surface big time now. And I
because
didn't
it's
really
the old
put
environment.
It together. That's right.
It's the old literate environment crystallized and archetypalized by the Bible. Now, it's really interesting to speculate about why Jesus, or maybe some people call him the Nazarene, why did he show up at the time of the first space empire, the Roman Empire, which was spread over space and didn't control time so much as the previous Byzantine, Sumerian, and Egyptian, and Indian, and Chinese cultures did. It controlled space. Here's this literate effect that's coming in as an invisible environment, and Jesus comes in and presents an oral message with tribal values, retrieving communitarianism or sharing regardless of status, all the values that at least some people believe Christianity is about, right? You think of Jesus bringing back the tribal oral values. Remember, he didn't write a word. He only spoke in parable.
He didn't write a book. He didn't even write his own book. That's right. That's right.
Right. He used to say, it is written, meaning there is this visual space, and he's pointing it out, this hidden visual space. It is written, but I say unto you, but, he goes, but I say unto you. Okay,
right.
So he takes his oral values and embeds them in the literate environment that, by either divine inspiration or maybe he was the Son of God, I don't know about that, that he could see what was coming over the next 2,000 years and said, I have to embed the oral archetypal values in this visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
And then that became the Christian order by 400 AD when Constantine named the Christian literate religion the only one that had the stability to keep the chaos that was happening as the... that empire started to weaken, and he moved into the Dark Ages.
It's interesting that right now in certain parts of the country has become more important and more evident, and the belief system now, or shall we call it faith, is even more so because of this financial issue. This digital environment has created that as well.
Yes, so here he had the wisdom to impart his non-visual message in the visual medium, so that he is a great champion, or his followers, the saints, are great followers, are great devotees to writing and thinking in manuscript culture terms. Then the printing press spreads that all over the world. So here we are at this critical time where we have to decide whether we should turn off the internet so that it doesn't change our kids into indigo corpus callosum extensions, and we preserve the literate value. But the paradox is, the icon of that literacy did not write. That's Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Was not.
That's right.
He was within dealing with literate concepts, but he spoke to. Big Biden?
I'm just amused by if you went and discussed this in front of a large congregation, what the reaction would be.
Well, McLuhan had that fun, but the interesting thing is we have this question, and McLuhan said. He became an advisor to the Vatican. They named him. They didn't really consult him much, but they felt they had to name him in 1973 as an advisor on social communications. The interesting thing is he said, if you, Mr. Pope, want to preserve this religion, this Christianity, which I'm a devout member of, that's what he said. He went to Mass every day. He said, we got to turn off, at least temporarily, television. If you don't do that, then you're not a serious Christian. Now, that's 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're way beyond that. We're in the Matrix now.
Yes.
And so it's normal for citizens either to react and become stern, strict fundamentalists in whatever culture they represent, or to become strange characters who go around the world sampling different religious cultures and different drugs as a spiritual quest. That's understandable,
right,
too, under these conditions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yes, many Westerners will think, isn't it interesting? The Bible predicted, in general terms, much going to and fro, the mark of the beast, the cashless society, all that is predicted in the Bible if you read it that way. And they understood, whoever wrote this, they understood that the visual society would flip into an electronic digital beehive. And that would be, quote, Luciferian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
From the literate point of view. So, yes, I think a lot of people have seen since the Reagan era, a lot of Americans, North Americans, and all over the world have seen the biblical scenario acting out. So, yes, you're getting people coming in, but they're just the fourth wave. It's been going on since the late 70s.
Yeah, the wave now, though, is far more intense in the last I would say last year, from people that have contacted me under financial duress, if the conversation goes long enough beyond them discussing whatever issue they have financially, they get into these bigger questions because of the fact that they've arrived at that place.
Right, and it's very interesting. The positive note is that I would see that the Antichrist or some Luciferian principle embedded in the electronic environment, and Marshall called, he used to say, the prince of the air, quoting the Bible, was a great electric engineer, master of hardware and software. That means master of literate environments, industrial environments, and the electronic digital environment. He worked in the interval, the prince of the air. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, we've been under that condition for 30, 40 years, and we're at a new breakthrough because we're extending neither the left hemisphere, which is hardware of the brain, or the right hemisphere. We're extending the corpus callosum, which is the thing that talks back and forth, the very interval itself. So right. The Proust and the squid, the science and story of the reading brain, well, we are now in an exciting point that no culture can police completely or control because we're in the science and story of a vibrating, oscillating, brainless. And I don't mean that negative, brainless. I mean the interval between the brains. So
yeah, I don't think they're going to be talking about that on the news lately when they should be. When they should be. It would save a lot of violence. It would save a lot of lives. But I think that... I think it's difficult to for an individual to wrap their head around some of these concepts when they're so stressed out to begin with. But yet at the same time, I've asked people to listen to what we've discussed. And when they do apply it, they do get some nuggets, and it's the shift starts to happen, which is great.
Right. It's like we said last week. A lot of people are not going to have any work to do. They're going to be on welfare or some kind of subsistence if they're lucky. Even people with a lot of money today are losing their money. You're going to have a lot of times on your hand. Marshall McLuhan and Joseph Campbell said that the 30s were great because you didn't have to work if you knew how to use your time. And so we're providing stuff for them to meditate on.
Yes, yes, because they're going to have to. You know, as I've said, and you've heard me say it over and over again, if you go through this process and you get rid of all your alleged credit card debt or secure, you still need to be able to make a conscious shift to think about how that happened to you and kind of shift your perceptual process to survive.
Yep, and to have some kind of poise in the chaos that's coming. Because, I mean, Bloomberg, mayor of New York, has announced cuts. You're getting nothing but budget cuts for the next couple of years. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's amazing. They're stopping the student loans. They're cutting back the student week. This is a catastrophic time.
Yes, absolutely. As soon as I saw that the no student loans in Massachusetts, I heard about that yesterday, and I said, okay, that means, and as well as that, they're cutting jobs in education as well, which means that the classroom isn't going to be available for a lot of people.
Yeah, literacy is gone. And so I'm not advocating that we go back to just reading books. We can now become literate to the different media environments we've created through our history. That's what McLuhan calls the laws of media.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
You look at the patterns that have created your sense of yourself, and even to the point of your religious sense. Mm-hmm. So the Dalai Lama does not know this.
Very interesting. All righty. All right, Bob, we're out of time. Everybody, I want to thank everybody for listening for this edition of Cash Flow with James Martinez. Special guest today, Bob Neverett. Everybody, please, if you would, listen to these archives in succession. Apply them to some of the other things that I've discussed regarding your financial issues. Move ahead, get it done. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. It's a record.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
You're listening to AchieveRadio.com. A new drummer for a new awakening.